following is an interview with Dewey Clower, a member of the advanced staff. It was conducted by Susan Yowell in room 345 of the old executive office building, December 14, 1972.
What was your title when you joined the White House staff?
Okay, they gave us the title of staff assistant to the president. I came to the White House on a full-time basis in August of 1970, detailed here from GSA. I'd been in my own business prior to going on the GSA payroll and had been doing volunteer advance work.
Excuse me for the interruption.
It's okay. Anyway, as I was saying, for about 9 months prior to actually going on government payroll, I'd been doing volunteer advance work, as so many people have, you know. Starting off, the way it all started was Connie Stewart was a neighbor and asked me one day if I'd like to do some advance work for Mrs. Nixon. And my first response is, what's an advance? Because I had no idea at all what they were talking about. But I went on a couple trips with Mrs. Nixon and, felt I got to know her somewhat, enjoyed working with her, found her to be a beautiful lady. And in the spring then of 70, Ron Walker called and said that they were going to have a class for advance men to start advancing the president. And I guess there were about 20 of us that were invited to that class. And again, from that time, and after participating in the Honor America Day up until the month of August, I was gone almost all the time, on my own time, for trips for the president. And at that time, went on GSA payroll. Shortly thereafter, the decision was made at some level there should be some full-time advance men in the White House itself. And at that time, John Faust, Bill Hinkle, Mike DeVal, and myself were invited to join on a full-time basis. Since then, we've been around the world a couple times, and we've worked with Ron and with and for the president, and it's been great, really.
Up until that fall, had Ron Walker been the only advanced, or the only person designated as an advanced?
That's correct, right. Following the 1968 elections, most of the then advanced men went into the agencies and so on. Ron had gone to Interior and was a special assistant to Hickel, and then sometime subsequent to that, he was invited to come to the White House and head up an advance organization. So right from the very beginning, the four of us that joined him, we've seen the development of what we feel is probably the best advance operations ever been put together. And the credit goes to Ron.
Had all of this been done then on a volunteer basis, or were you?
That's correct. And as you may or may not know, the majority of the people that participated in this last campaign were volunteers. Over the period of the 3 years that we were here, almost 3 years, I guess we interviewed, screened some 1,300 people.
All volunteers.
And finally came up with a complete advanced staff of about 55 people. That was as far as the presidential advance was concerned. A lot of those remaining out of the 1,300 that we talked to, a lot of them went to Committee for the Reelection for surrogate advance work. Some of them were assigned to the First Family Advance operation and worked for Bill Kotus. As I say, you know, what can you say about advance? It's an interesting job where you're totally charged with everything that the president does at your site. You're coordinating with the military aides, with the Secret Service, with the White House Communications Agency, and you're calling the shots. And those people support the decisions.
Could you describe how the office was organized since you were here from the beginning and how it developed to what it is now?
When the four of us came over, we were out down on the second floor. It was Ron and an office and two secretaries. And for quite some time, we worked right out of Ron's office until we moved up to this floor. And then we added more secretaries. About November of 71, I guess, was when Mike Schroth came on board. And after he had been out on a couple trips, Ron named him as the desk man, you know, the in-house coordinator for all the schedules, getting approvals from Haldeman's office on what we would do or not do, or what the president would do or not do. And so basically that organization evolved to what it was up through the election. That is Ron Walker, special assistant to the president, chief advance man. Mike Schroth, the desk man, scheduler, coordinator, with four secretaries. And then John Faust left and went to the Committee for the Reelection, which left the three of us who were then named senior advance men. That is Mike DeVal, Bill Hinkle, and myself. So before and during the campaign, the three of us sort of played the role that Ron had played in previous years, that is doing the pre-advance work and then going back and supervising the volunteers that we named as the lead and other advanced personnel on the site. So we actually didn't do the lead, as we called them. We might, in several instances, we would have as many as two and three or four stops in a day that we were responsible for from a supervisory standpoint, but they were actually run by the volunteers. So that basically is the way it was organized.
Could you, although I'm sure there's no typical day or typical trip, but could you describe the steps which the advance office took in planning for a presidential stop? Maybe begin with something which would not be campaign related, something prior to the campaign.
Let's take a typical non-political trip. Let's say, for an example, it's one I did so I could relate to it a little better. Say the president was invited to address the American Milk Producers Convention in Chicago. All right, a letter of invitation comes in and goes through Dave Parker's office. If Dave has any feel that this may be something that the president might want to do, he then staffs it out. That's what we call it. Memos go to the assistants to the president saying the president's been invited to address the Milk Producers Institute. Do you think it's a good idea or not? They reply, papers go back into Parker, and he then prepares a memo for Mr. Haldeman saying this idea has been staffed out. Here are the things that have been said, pro and con. Probably about that same time, we would get an indication that there was interest, that is the advance office, and someone would go out and do a survey. So in this instance, I went out, I looked at McCormick Hall, I met with the people from the American Milk Producers Institute, and we discussed what their ideas were as far as the president's participation, what they would like for him to do, the proposed time, and that type of thing. We would then come back and write a survey report saying, in our opinion, what difficulties there might be. We'd try to get some political feel from the organization, if there would be any problems with the group that would be assembled, you know, what was their feelings toward the president. We would look at it from a logistical standpoint, where we would fly the airplane to, if we had to use helicopters, where we would motorcade, if there would be crowd situations, et cetera, et cetera. Put it all into a memorandum again to Mr. Haldeman. Well, based on recommendations then from the staff and our survey, Mr. Haldeman then would take this into the president and say, I think you should, or I think you should not do this. And then obviously the president would make the decision whether he would want to or not. Okay, let's, in this case, he said, yes, I'll address the milk producers. So a date and a time is established then as to when the trip will occur. And then depending upon the complexity of the trip, an advance team is put together and a trip meeting is called. And the trip meetings were held right here in this conference room. At the trip meeting, there would be the lead advance man, the designated lead Secret Service agent, the military aide that's been charged for responsibility from the military aide's office, and the White House communications trip officer. We'd all get together. I'd give them a rough schedule of the proposed events, and we would set a time to do a pre-advance if we had the luxury of doing that. Where we did pre-advances, the same team, just the four or five people, would go out, go through it again, say, here's where we're going to land, here's where we're going to park the plane, we'll helicopter to Meigs, we'll have the motorcade parked here, and we'll drive such and such a route, and go look at McCormick again and say, the platform's going to be here, we'll need to PA such and such an area that needs to be lighted for television, or it doesn't, and the press stands will be here. Here's where the people will come in. Here's where they'll be seated, and go through the whole thing. Come back, then put the rest of your advance team together. For example, the Secret Service would assign what they call a site supervisor to each place that we would go. They'd have a site supervisor for the airport at O'Hara, and then there'd be a site supervisor for Meigs. There'd be a site supervisor for the McCormick Center. And in some cases, we, from an advance standpoint, would do the same thing, where there might be a crowd situation or something, we would assign an advance man. The White House Communications Agency, in addition to the trip officer, would have an assistant trip officer and a radio man and a telephone man, and then about 12 to 24 operators that they would take, depending upon, again, whether it was a in and out, overnight, so on. But in this instance, where it was an in and out, it'd take about 12 operators. Then we would go in 3 to 4 to 5 days prior to the event, and then just start making all the arrangements. Anything that there was questions on as far as the president's participation, we'd get on the phone back to Mike Schroth. A memo would be written from Mike through Dwight Chapin to Mr. Haldeman saying, the advance man proposes that the president does such and such, approved, disapproved. And so in this 3 or 4 days, the entire program is put together.
In this all this pre-trip work, the initial survey which you do after you receive notice from Mr. Parker, and in the pre-advance work where you're making recommendations to Mr. Haldeman, how much flexibility did the advance staff have in actually setting up or deciding whether he would have a motorcade or,
mm-hmm.
or recommending okay. where he should stop and talk, if remarks are...
Well, this was something that did evolve during the period of time we were here, and I think it's natural. The longer we were here, the more flexibility we had, because Mr. Haldeman recognized that we were getting the experience, we were getting more of a feel for, we would know what the president would want to do or would not do. And, you know, toward the, in the last year, we called a lot of shots. You know, there's a lot of things that we would have to make a decision on ourselves, and we knew it was okay. In the beginning, I guess about everything down to, well, the very simplest of decisions, we would run through Mr. Haldeman's office. There was quite a bit of flexibility from the very beginning, and as I say, more so in the past months. I'm told by the people that did advance work in 68 when the president was a candidate that they had a lot more flexibility. But I think this is understandable, and the thing that was drilled into us from the very beginning, you're advancing the president, not a candidate. And we did things differently, and we have done things differently than was done in 1968, because he is the president. You have the office to think about.
Did you work on any of the advancement campaigns?
No, I did not. No.
Another area, I wondered if when you made the initial survey and did the pre-advance work in an area, if you contacted many of the local people, and if so, who would you have been working with in a...
Okay, again, in a non-political town situation?
Yes.
Chicago is a good example of that, because we never did anything in Chicago, and I think I advanced all except two trips the president made to Chicago since I've been here. But we never made any contacts with anyone in Chicago before we went to the mayor's office, because we wanted him to be totally aware of what was coming up. And we would schedule a meeting with Mayor Daley through one of his assistants. When to go in and sit down with the mayor and say, the president's planning to do such and such, or he's thinking about doing such and such, and we want you to know about it. So we did play that game regardless of wherever we went. We would make contact before the trip is announced. Contact is made with the governor, regardless of his party, and with the mayor of that city, and so forth, saying, this is what the president plans to do.
Were these generally courtesy?
It's a courtesy,
meetings,
yes.
Or were they also a matter of the local mayor's office offering substantive?
Well, we always hoped that would happen, and in almost all cases it did. As we got into political situations, in some cases we didn't get as much cooperation as you could imagine. But in Chicago, again, as an example, we always found them to be most helpful, and in these initial meetings, the statement is always made, you know, we support the president, we'll give you whatever you want. And they always did. There was never any problem in dealing with their police departments or the fire departments or anything else, because, you know, we had carte blanche.
Did you then deal directly with the local police and fire departments?
No.
Or did you do it through the mayor's office again?
No. Once the initial contact was made and he designated his chief of police or the assistant chief of police and the fire chief or assistant and so forth, then those particular areas which involve public safety and protection work directly with the Secret Service. So we identified them and then said to our lead Secret Service agents, here are the people that's been designated for you to work with.
That brings up a question. You mentioned the different White House people who mm-hmm. are present at the trip meetings.
Right.
Could you give me a breakdown of the responsibilities as they were divided among these people?
Mm-hmm. Well, the obvious one is the Secret Service, who is charged with the protection of the president. Not only do they provide the protection and coordinate with the local law enforcement agencies where we would go, but they also provided the transportation, that is, the ground transportation for the president and his staff. All we had to say was so many members of the White House staff would be on the trip, and we need so many cars. They provide cars and drivers, escorts, everything. They did intelligence work for us, not only from a standpoint of the safety of the president, but anything that might involve an embarrassment to the president, and briefed us daily on any intelligence that they were able to find. The White House Communications Agency is charged by law for providing instantaneous and around-the-world communications for the president wherever he is. As a spill-off from this, they provide the staff the needed communications in order to plan and perform the trip. At least the lead agent, the lead staff advance, so forth, would have anywhere we went White House phones tied directly into the White House switchboard. In addition to that, they provide a number of radio networks, a staff network, which is known as Sierra, to security networks, a president's duplex network called Yankee Zulu, where he could talk from his car, you know, via radio anywhere in the world. So that they are charged with all the communications. In addition to that, in a non-political situation, they are charged with the proper lighting for news coverage, providing the flags, the backdrops, the presidential podium, and all the odds and ends that goes to make up a presidential setting. And this is part of their traveling kit. The Military Aids Office has the overall responsibility of providing and making sure that any military asset that's needed is provided, not only from a standpoint of transporting the president from Washington to Timbuktu via aircraft and helicopters, but if we needed military assistance from a base, be it drivers for the motorcade or medical assistance or whatever, anything in that line, the request goes to the Military Aids Office and they get it for you. Part of their function is to provide what we called an Air Force One and helicopter advance man, who wherever we went, we had these people with us who would coordinate with the airport managers as far as traffic in and around the airport. I mean, there it is, airborne traffic. Seeing to it that there were facilities to refuel and protect the aircraft while it's on the ground. Selecting landing spots for helicopters, you know, this type of thing. So it's a team of experts. Everybody, all you have to do is sit out there and call the shots. They do the work.
Then you would say that these are just the support arms of this office in this particular role.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. That's an awesome amount of power.
But the advance man from this office assigned to the trip, the lead advance person, would direct the efforts.
Yes, he has the overall responsibility for the trip. And he then coordinates with these other support elements to make the trip successful. That's in a non-political situation. In a political situation, the only difference is the added responsibility for the razzmatazz and the, you know, raising the crowds and the dropping the balloons and all the excitement and so forth that goes into a political rally.
Could you, since you've begun now, could you go ahead and describe the differences and the
Okay.
Between a political and a non-political trip.
In a political situation, we were always sensitive to the situation which could cause embarrassment to the administration, that is, from a standpoint of providing something or having the government provide something that anyone could criticize. In other words, let's mention a couple specifically. Mostly it fell into the White House communications or WACA area. As I said earlier, they are charged with the responsibility of PA systems, lighting, backdrops, etc. But in a political situation, we would have the local organization or the Committee for the Re-election or whoever pay to have the PA systems put in, pay to have the backdrops put up, pay to have the platforms built, so on, so that there could never be any criticism that the government was providing these things in a political situation. That's the basic difference as far as the team working, and that we were just, you know, I would say overly cautious that there could never be any criticism on this regard. However, the complexities of a political rally is quite a bit more involved in a non-political situation. Let's take a simple thing such as an airport rally. And this is really about the simplest type of political situation you can have. But you start thinking about all of the things that have to be done and the sometimes hundreds of people that get involved in it. Let's take, what was one we did on the last swing? Well, we had two in one day, but let's talk about Albuquerque, New Mexico. The situation there was that the president merely landed, got off the airplane, went to a podium, spoke, got into a convertible, drove by the crowd so everyone had the opportunity to see him, got on his airplane and left. Sounds very simple. But obviously it would be a complete failure if you didn't have people there. Well, in order to get people, we have many crowd raising techniques, and they all involve volunteer help and getting the crowds out. First of all, you set up a handbill committee. In Albuquerque, which is not a big town, we printed over 100,000 handbills and posters, one thing and another. And it takes, you know, it takes 150 people or so to just hand out flyers and this type of thing. Then you set up a VIP committee. The VIP committee is responsible for contacting all the VIPs in the state, inviting them there, making arrangements for their transportation if necessary, the care and feeding of them while they're there, and all the many other facets that get involved in that. And you have a publicity committee who work with the local radio stations trying to get public service announcements, buying ads where we had to, getting newspaper articles into the newspaper, getting pictures, feature articles, anything we could do to, you know, keep this event in the public eye. And you've got an airport facilities committee, which has to round up ropes and barrels, build platforms, decorate, get bunting flags, whatever, you know, you decide that you want to do to make it look enthusiastic. You got parking committees, you got, you know, just a zillion different things that that you have to do in this type of a situation. And you've got an entertainment committee. You know, you got to entertain the people while they're waiting for the president to come. And a program committee, and it goes on and on and on. As the, it's not unusual, and I know I did stop at one time. I forget which event it may have been now. But I counted up that in the end, we had 1,375 people working on a trip.
And all but a half a dozen of these are
volunteers.
Right. Are you in that number? Are you including these support?
Yes, I am. Right, people? I am. Right. But that's less than 50.
Where do you get the volunteers? How do you recruit them?
Well, in a political situation, we are have always been given a political contact in that state. Before the Committee for the Re-election was formed, it was the national committee man or the state chairman or, you know, someone in that state. And about the first thing we'd do after we get on the ground would be to have a meeting with him and say, here's what we got to do. Here's how many people we're going to need. Can you get them for us? Most times they were successful. If the first guy we went to couldn't do it, you go to somebody else. You just keep going until you get the people you need. That's one of the, I know Ron has a couple sayings. One is that a good advance man knows more about the city that he's in the first 6 hours he's there than a native does. You have to. And the second is that you've got to be able to size up this prime contact that you've been given. In the first 30 minutes you're with him, or you're no good. And I can't tell you the number of times that you sit down with the state chairman and very quickly realize he's not the man. He's just not the guy.
Does this ever cause problems in letting him know that you are going to go to someone else?
Well, there's many ways you can handle it, obviously. The one that seems to work the best is just tell him that, look, you're very important in this community and you're very busy and have so many things to do. Is there someone that works for you that will have more time and you can get around them, you know, that way? Because as far as he's concerned, he's still number one, but has designated the hour-by-hour drudgery to someone else. There have been a couple times you just have to flat out tell them, you know, get out of the way, but that doesn't happen very often. Thank goodness.
And he provides you with names of people to head up these committees.
Right. That's the way it normally would work.
But how much longer do you
think we'll be in? Oh, we have a meeting with the lighting people, don't we?
Three.
Okay.
There's about 10 of them out there.
I think we'll probably be finished by then.
How closely did you work with these committee heads?
Well,
in the local.
Okay. Our procedure was, assuming this prime contact was a good guy, and we told him, we need this many committee chairmen, and I'd like to see each one of them individually. We would meet with a committee, designated committee chairman, individually for 5-10 minutes. And then, almost on a daily basis, or sometimes more than on a daily basis, would have him reporting back his activities. So you work very closely with him. Mm-hmm. Usually the lead advance man never gets out of the office after the first day on the ground. You're, you know, strictly on the phone and having meetings and one thing or another.
Well, I notice you have a folder there on the trip to China. Could you talk a little bit about the difficulties encountered in the foreign trips which you would not face?
Well, I think the differences are somewhat obvious in that, number one, we are the guest of the country that we're going into, and yet we had always had very strong opinions and directions from the White House as to what the president would or would not do in that country. So it became and becomes a matter of negotiation. And, you know, there are times when, in Russia, for example, like the negotiations went for days as to whose car the president would ride in. So you have to, it's a matter of negotiating and trying to get the things you want done and yet make it appear and make them feel that they are getting what they want, if you follow what I'm trying to say. That is the basic difference, because the logistics and so forth are the same, but it's just a matter of negotiating. Normally, the advanced man is working at a pretty high level. Well, in Russia, my counterpart was the Minister of Foreign Affairs for the Ukraine, and we met, you know, two or three times a day and discussed at length, you know, what we knew the president would like to do or would not like to do. And as I say, it's a matter of negotiations back and forth.
Did you work on both the China and the Russia
trips? I didn't go to China. I had the backup team on Guam. I spent a month on Guam. But the year before, I had the Yugoslavia trip. And while there, you know, visited quite a few of the countries. And on the Russian trip, I went with the president then after the Russia into Iran and Poland and so forth before we came back. Oh, somebody really wants one of us. Very
insistent. Oh, well, I don't want to keep you any longer than I have to, but could you tell me, well, first of all, do the files that have been kept on the president's trips, do you feel that they would fully document for researchers the activities of his office and of the individuals? Very often the staff name or staff individual is lost in the paperwork, and
oh, yeah,
it
I'm
does
sure
not
that.
Really show what Mr. Clower did during his White House.
It's our feeling that that is the least important part of the of the office. I think it documents very, very well the activities of the president. And as you know, someone from your office always checked after each trip, did the president really do this? Did he really meet these people? Did he really go there? And so forth. So from that standpoint, it certainly is a good file on the presidential activities. As far as what is done by the staff in the field, there's no real way to document that, I don't think.
It really would not, the files would really not show the people that you worked with in an individual locality and the problems you encountered?
No. In some instances they would, because we normally wrote a trip report after the trip outlining the good guys and the bad guys, what difficulties we had and what successes we had. For those trips, then it would be pretty well documented. As we got busier and busier, sometimes we just didn't have time to write those reports.
You mentioned Mr. Parker's office and the support offices. Mm-hmm. Were there other offices in the White House complex with which you had frequent contact?
Yes, the political office, Harry Dent's office, the congressional liaison office. Again, I probably left those steps out, but before the advance team is launched, we always got a briefing from Harry Dent's office on the political situation. Whether it be a political trip or a non-political trip, we would still get a briefing from that office on the political situation in that state, and a briefing from Timmons' office on any congressional problems of what congressmen should be involved or should not be involved. So that, and the, at some time or another, we were involved, I guess, with every office. Obviously, on foreign trips, we worked very closely with the National Security Council. On trips where they were for the purpose of foreign affairs briefings, we worked very closely with that office. On trips involving the president going out to the country, telling them about revenue sharing, we worked with Ehrlichman's office. For the law enforcement programs that he went out and spoke on. We worked with the LEAA and, again, Ehrlichman's office. So it depended upon the nature of the trip. But as I say, at some time or other, I guess we were involved with about every office at the White House.
You would work with the directly with the offices involved in the particular policy area.
That is correct, right.
Did you work with Steve Bull quite
often? Oh, sure. Once the president is on the ground and going through the event, it was our job to work directly with Steve and tell him, you know, what's going to happen next, so that he in turn briefed the president. You know, simple thing is turn right here and turn left there, but we worked right at Steve's elbow. In a crowd situation, we were always right with Steve.
Did he ever, actually help write up the logistical plans for the trip of when you are going to turn left?
You mean, did Steve do that?
Mm-hmm.
No, because, he depended upon the advance man on the ground to guide him. So it was not...
Well, I know he's done some of that with the president's activities inside the White House.
Yes, in the situation, or in situations where it's not feasible for Steve to be right with him, he would do that, and we would do that in the field. For an example, if he were to go out onto a stage, we would always write in detail who would be the first person to greet him, what was the layout of the platform, where were you supposed to sit, that type of thing. And then right before he would go out, either Steve would brief him or if there was electronic coverage, Mark Good would brief him on where the cameras were, for him. And then, the ones that really get into detail was in the foreign trips where you have wreath-laying ceremonies and that type of thing. You have to write up in real detail how many steps to take and where to pause. When to transfer the wreath and what salute is appropriate.
And then be working with the protocol of the counterpart.
That's correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea who will be assigned your responsibilities?
No, I don't.
I know that there are so many changes in the staff, you probably don't know where.
No, I am of the opinion that it will be greatly curtailed. And also the opinion that some of us will be involved, especially in foreign trips or this type of thing, in the next couple of years, if he takes them. That's our understanding. I look forward to it.
Then you're not actually leading the staff other than your assignment to the
To the inaugural committee? Well, that is the temporary situation. However, I think that most of us will either go to an agency or back to private life or whatever, but would from time to time obviously like to continue our association. It's the greatest experience I've ever had in my life. I was in my own business, and when I came here I knew nothing about the intricacies of government. Probably still don't know much about it, but the exposure to governors, to emperors, to foreign ministers, to ambassadors, to the people that you had to work with on a person-to-person basis. There's just no other way that you could ever get that kind of exposure.
Have there been any particularly good magazine articles or newspaper articles on the advanced staff, national journalist?
No.
Has done some great articles.
No.
Various staffs.
We have stayed away from that. There, I guess almost every trip we've ever on, there's been some reporter that would approach you and say, can I document what you do to on an advance? And we've just never done this. We don't feel it's something that should be done, at least up until this time, because, we're doing it for the president, and he's the star, and that's the way it should be. We have a passion for anonymity.
Then the fullest record of the activities of this office would be in the file.
Yes, right.
And do you periodically send those to central files, or are they all kept?
Well, they're all, I guess right now, they're all being put together and will be transferred in toto to the records. We have not, other than the schedule itself, been transmitting anything to the records office. But as part of essentially closing down this office, all of that will be transferred.
One small question. Did you have a secretary who was assigned to you?
No, not really.
With your,
well, I guess Julie would be most familiar with the files, and that she was sort of our gal. But
I was going to ask, did Julie serve kind of as the lead secretary,
right,
as far as organizing?
Right. They, during the campaign or in this last few months, they sort of split up the responsibilities. Karen made the volunteer assignments. In other words, she called all the guys in the field and found out who was available and put them into the different slots in the field.
Karen,
right. Julie was always the gal that did the schedules and the one we talked to the most when we were out in the field. Mm-hmm. And in the latter months, Sally was very involved in that too. As you may or may not know, you know, Julie went to Russia, for example, and was our main secretary there.
I had heard a term used here within the last couple of months, trip girl.
Okay.
Really were they referring to?
When we had several trips going on at one time, one of the girls was assigned the responsibility of following all the paperwork for that particular trip. Mm-hmm. And it would either be Julie or, in some cases, Marcia or Sally. And they became, if you will, the desk girl for that particular trip, as far as making sure that the memos went to the right people in the White House, and then in turn that the information got back out to the field on decisions.
Mm-hmm. And then was that person then responsible for making sure that the file was complete?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. The trip report was in.
Right, right. The thank you lists were made, and the letters were sent. And
pictures.
Right.
Do you have a permanent address where you might be reached over the next 10 years or indefinite time?
Well, I've been in the Washington area since 62. I guess I'll be here for a while more. 1098 Fairbank Street, Great Falls, Virginia.
Pretty area.
Oh, I like it very much.
I've been here all my life.
Have you really?
Yeah. I don't want to hold you too long with those people waiting outside, but is there anything else you would like to say now, or something that you might mention which might be of interest to go in more depth at a later time? Were there any particular trips or experiences which you did have while you were here?
Well, there were, I guess you'd pick any one trip and there were experiences.
Right.
There are many anecdotes that one could tell. I don't know, we can maybe some other time think more in those lines. The observations of the president in different situations, and watching how he handled situations were very interesting.
That does bring up one question. What kind of feedback and did you get from offices in what, from Mr. Haldeman?
Mm-hmm.
Or did you get feedback?
Oh, yes.
From the president on
usually very quickly. especially if there were criticisms. But there was almost always a post-trip debriefing. Mr. Haldeman always carried a pad with him and made notes on things that were good or bad. And very soon after a trip, there'd be a memorandum come to us on points and with the president's comments quite often as to what was good or what was bad about a particular trip, or what he liked or didn't like, how it should be done differently in the future. And the art of advancing was something that evolved. There were many, many changes during the time that I was here, you know, as to the way we would handle situations. Even as simple things as an alignment of a motorcade, where people rode in a motorcade. I mean, this was constantly being changed. If you ever looked at our manual, it was just, I guess we updated it, you know, just almost on a daily basis.
Our diary for one.
Right. Familiar
with. Did you have direct feedback from Mr. Alderman then? In the sense, did you face-to-face contact or?
Not too often. Most of the time it was from Dwight. You know, he would talk to Dwight on the plane on the way back or on the way to work or something. And then Dwight would give us the comments. There have been times, many times, in the field where you'd get an instant response.
Right. Do you have a biographical sketch which we can include in your file?
I could give you one.